everybody. It is Tom Doton bringing you another episode of the Information's 411, a podcast brought to you by theinformation.com, where we cover all the biggest companies in the tech, media, and other related industries. How are you guys all doing out there? Everybody enjoying your work from home, if you are so lucky to be able to do that, or working remotely? We here at The Information join you very much in solidarity. We have been working from home since Thursday and plan on doing so for the next couple of weeks. So having our Zoom meetings just like you, communicating over Slack just like you, The Information, they're just like us. So this episode, I thought maybe there was a chance we could talk about something not related to the coronavirus and its effect on all aspects of the industry, but that's just not possible. So had a great conversation earlier with Martin Piers, the managing editor here, who talked us through what the market downturn means for the tech industry and all the companies that are traded on the markets and private markets too. We also kind of look back at 2008 and, you know, what are the comparisons between what's happening now and then. And by the way, for those who are wondering how unprecedented this is, from Martin's perspective, this has happened before, and this is something that we have pulled through. So maybe no reason to panic entirely. So that's my conversation today. Before I get to my interview with Martin, though, I did want to say one quick thing. So this show, which we've been doing now for 5 years, is intended to give people a behind-the-scenes look at how we put our stories together. So I or Priya will interview the reporters, and we'll talk a bit about the process and what are the implications of the stories, things like that. Someone was asking me the other day, does this feel like the end of the world? And the answer obviously is, you know, I hope for most of you out there who have not experienced, any disease, no, right? The vast majority of us are healthy. But the question is an interesting one also because to a degree, it does sort of feel like the end of the world in that for most people out there, the end of the world is something that you experience remotely. It's a movie you watch or a TV show you're watching. And obviously, there are real effects to the global pandemic, and we're seeing it in the markets, and we're seeing it in, you know, people who are already being laid off because of the economic impact, and of course, those who are getting sick. But for the vast majority of us, it is something that is playing out much like the end of the world virtually. It's something that we are consuming through a medium that we fascinate in and ultimately have no control over. And it's easy to get overwhelmed and panicked and start to think only negatively about things. And one thing that's worth keeping in mind, if I could offer anything to you and if this is worth anything, is that for the vast majority of us, what we're doing right now and shutting down schools and sporting events and all this and the like is to remain safe and to manage this situation in as effective and efficient and safe a way as possible to save as many lives as we can. And the stories that you read hopefully can help you do that, can help you manage the situation in a way that benefits you and benefits those around you. And it's important to read the news to be informed, I think, and it's important to read the news to be safe and to keep those around you safe. And let's not lie, there's a percentage of us that are just reading the news because there's morbid fascination here. I mean, there's a reason why the most streamed and rented movies right now are about outbreaks, like Outbreak or Contagion. But it's easy to also get lost and forget what is real and what is actually happening to you and the people around you. So if I could offer any advice to people listening to this podcast, and if it's worth anything to you, I would say stay informed, stay safe, but also stay sane. That's one thing that you have a modicum of control over. Anyway, I'll get off my platform. Let's just get on over to my very sane and very safe interview with Martin Piers. Hey, Martin. So the market had its worst day yesterday on Thursday since 1987. So more than 30 years. The Dow Jones was off 10%. It is up a bit today, or at least right now when we're recording this. It seems like there maybe is a sense of a bottom, or there's also some expectations that Congress will pass through some sort of rescue package that could help some of these ailing companies. But as someone who's covered the markets for years and has seen at least some aspects of this before, the first thing I wanted to get a sense from you is, what companies, since this has been going on for the last few weeks, which companies have you seen weathering it fairly well so far? Who's not seen as huge of a drop off as the others?
Well, if you're talking about in terms of the stock price, the big companies, you know, the Google, for instance, Amazon in particular, their stock, I think Amazon in particular has not dropped as much as the overall market. Google stock, I just looked it up. It is down in line with the market, which is down about 25% since the peak in February. On the other hand, there's a whole range of smaller companies and even sort of high-profile companies like Uber, which are down much more, which obviously indicates that the market expects that those companies will be affected by the downturn in the economy. I mean, I'm just looking now at Uber's stock. It's actually down still. The market overall is up 4.5%. Uber stock is off 45%, I think, since February, which is kind of extraordinary. Lyft is off, I think, about 50%. That's really striking because as the virus stuff was beginning to spread here, I think we all thought that Uber and Lyft would maybe actually benefit because people would prefer riding in cars where they're the only passenger.
Right, as opposed to public transit.
Public transit. But in fact, Amir, you know, Amir's explanation, Amir is our reporter who covers these companies, his explanation is that they have lost the airport business, which is the, you know, really profitable part of their business, and also that the affluent people who use Uber to get to work are just not traveling. So for that reason, they've been really hard hit.
Right, right. And I want to get to the consequences of those sort of drops in a second. But the surprises for me coming out of, yesterday was, you know, we've seen Zoom, which everyone is talking about now as the video conference work from home solution that, you know, is suddenly almost a household name to people. And they've had, I think, a relatively better performance than the markets. You can correct me if that's wrong. But Slack, which is sort of the other side of the coin, the kind of text-based remote work solution, has just been plummeting. What's going on there, you think?
Well, I would say that their earnings were awful. Slack, actually, they had revenue up, I think, 49%. And Slack stock had been actually doing okay over the last month, because I think people thought that it would get a lot more usage from people working from home, which is obviously true. But what Slack revealed yesterday was that that extra usage is of people who are not paying for it. So I think the market has, you know, realized that Slack won't actually benefit in terms of revenue. So Slack stock today is down a lot, and overall now the stock is down 40% since last month. So Slack is now doing much worse than the market.
Right. So the next question, obviously, after all of this is what happens to these kinds of companies? If you're an Uber and a Lyft and you've seen, you know, both of which have seen a bit of a recovery, you know, Uber, you had Masa trumpeting its stock uptick just a couple of weeks ago. Has now been completely reversed. I mean, if you are a company that has seen such a downturn in your share price over a short period of time, what are the consequences of that?
It really depends on their ability to weather the economic downturn. If they have the cash and they can just withstand the decline in business, they'll be okay. You know, the problem will be for companies that don't have the cash and have to either raise money, and they may find that hard. So it will really depend on the companies. I mean, we've seen a company like Casper, which went public in January, I think. Their stock has gone from 12 when they IPO'd to $4.90. Now, that company is losing money, and it presumably will have to raise more, and investors may be really skeptical that they'll be able to.
Right. I mean, Casper was a company that people were skeptical about even in the best of times.
Right. Exactly.
Right.
So, I think it really depends on the situation. But we could see some companies getting acquired. if they really need cash. But otherwise, I think many of these companies will just ignore the stock and just wait for the upturn, which will eventually come.
Right. So let's talk about the acquisition thing for a second, because it's again, the obvious question when you see a market cap diminish so substantially. What would be the kind of scenario in which you could see a series of acquisitions of some of these, you know, cheaper looking companies?
It's what I was just saying. I think if you need cash, you might have no alternative but to find a new owner. I mean, I think we were talking earlier, in 2008-09, XM, they had just merged, XM and Sirius, and they had a whole lot of debt that they had to refinance, and they were not able to. And Liberty Media, at the worst of the stock market, I think it was in March of 09, they came in and they lent the company money to stay in business, and eventually got control for a very small price. So this is a good time for companies to have that have cash. They can maybe find bargains. Right. If you don't have cash, then you can really have a problem right now.
Right. Well, you and I were, again, talking before this recording that this also translates to venture capitalists who, if a company, you know, portfolio company or one that's out looking to raise money suddenly needs cash, if you're a VC, you could be in a pretty good position to dictate the terms more to your advantage, right?
Yes. In fact, we are hearing that there are startups out there that have seen their business just completely tank. If those companies need cash, they will be able to raise it, but the terms will be much more onerous than in the past.
Right, right. Which, you know, is an interesting kind of the opposite side of what we've seen leading to this point, where companies have been able to dictate such, you know, generous terms on their side in order to maintain control and give owners, you know, huge stakes.
Yeah, exactly.
So one thing that you mentioned in a briefing, I think a day or two ago, is that some of these companies could also face margin calls. Could you explain that a little bit?
Sure. If you, and there's not that many companies I can think of. SoftBank is the real outstanding example of a company that borrowed against stock that it owns in other companies. And when you do that, you give the stock to the bank as collateral. When that stock price goes down a lot, the bank will frequently come back to you at a certain point and say, you have to give us something. You have to either give us cash or you have to give us more stock to make up for the decline in the stock that you pledged. So that can trigger all sorts of financial problems for companies like that.
Just lastly here, as a relatively new reporter to, you know, covering the oncoming of what appears to be some sort of a recession. And I mentioned, you know, earlier that this was the most substantial drop in the market since 1987, but the most recent corollary would have been, 2008 and the financial crisis. Does what's going on now feel familiar to you? Does it seem unprecedented? Where do you, as someone who's covered the markets for some time, where does it sit to you?
It is definitely not unprecedented. And I remember very well seeing the same or worse in 2008-09. In fact, I always remember in 2008, the day that Congress voted against the bailout, the stock market in the next minute dropped 1,000 points. So that this kind of enormous swings and this kind of market panic are definitely not, we just haven't observed it very often lately, but we've definitely seen it before.
And what do you think investors are looking for now in order to feel confident again? I mean, from what I remember in watching as a mere citizen in 2008, 2009, it was more just like, okay, the bailouts are coming. These banks are somewhat stabilized. The number of defaults on home mortgages is maybe slowing down a bit, and people started to feel like it was safe to invest again. I mean, this is a kind of an exogenous event with a virus that is, you know, basically shutting down various industries and countries around the world. I mean, what do you think investors are looking for in order to feel like we can start, you know, putting our money back into the markets?
Investors want some clearer idea about what the extent of this downturn will be like. I mean, the problem right now is that we don't really have a clear idea. Yeah, how long will the virus be spreading for? How long will people have to work from home? just how bad will this downturn be? Until that picture becomes a little bit clearer, I think the market will remain very choppy.
It certainly has been choppy. Thanks, Martin, for joining and explaining all this. I guess we'll see where it all goes from here. All right, thanks. Bye.
Thanks.